Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For daily content, follow Bartholomew Town on Instagram and TikTok. As Rhode Island's first ever member-owned credit union, Navigant Credit Union has been a staple in the local business community for more than 108 years. Today, Navigant is a $3.4 billion institution serving more than 136,000 members across 25 physical branch locations. But since its founding in 1915, the mission has never changed. Navigant Credit Union's team of financial professionals have remained committed to improving the financial well-being of the families, businesses, and communities they serve across Rhode Island. Learn more at NavigantCU.org.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.
Bartholomew Town is brought to you in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who offer a wide array of programs. Learn more at uri.edu/online or give them a call at 401-874-5280. That's 401-874-5280. Housing Secretary Stephen Pryor joins us for, I don't know, probably the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth time here on the podcast. We always appreciate you making the time for us.
Great to be back with you, Bill.
Lots going on. Obviously, we have the ongoing housing crisis as a whole. It's something that we know is going to take time to resolve. We know that it's going to take a moonshot type of strategy to get to the point where each sector of this crisis, whether it's the unhoused, whether it's working folks housing, rezoning, all of these things are long-term strategies. Before we get into some of the new legislation, a newly proposed bond, just your overall take now that we've had a few months of enactment on last year's legislation and just your assessment of where we're at today in terms of managing this great challenge.
Well, first of all, the funds are flowing and that's good news. So we're using a significant amount of our COVID era funding for housing production, and that is working. Now, it also involves a lot of work on the part of the relevant agencies, including Rhode Island Housing, which is carrying out the programming. But we have, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars flowing through, and we are seeing many projects across the state take up the dollars, and that's good news. We have, you know, in one form or another, 98% of our $300+ million allocated and in the pipeline in some form, meaning committed to a program or committed all the way to a housing development. So this is good news. In addition, and there's, by the way, tons more has to be done to ensure that each housing development actually breaks ground and then actually cuts ribbon and opens the door. So not to trivialize that. Now, in addition, the speaker's initial reform package is being implemented. So from last year, of course, there was the elimination of a layer of appeal, the so-called SHAB, which was a state housing appeals board, is now abolished, so that there is less of an opportunity, quite frankly, to stall a project. And that's coupled with a new housing land use court calendar that has the potential, Bill, to expedite appeals when they do go to the courts without that extra layer. It's been too little time to see whether this stuff is working. We need to assess, though, whether it is being implemented effectively and is it helping. There's also provisions in the previous package, such as the adaptive reuse of commercial structures. That means that industrial sites, factories, as well as malls and even churches and synagogues can be converted more readily to housing again, too early to tell. We're seeing some interest, but these are all programs and initiatives that are kicking in now.
One of the big things that you flagged last year when this conversation was, as has been for many years, but in conversations last year, was the zigzag zoning laws across the state, and also the lack of a full-time, or even in some cases, any town planner. And on a municipal level, how significant the problems really are when it comes to implementation. Some new legislation proposed by Speaker Shikarchi, or I should say within his bundle of legislation, is actually on a continuing education level to essentially train and implement more town planners. That's vital. On the zoning piece, though, I mean, without getting into the details of which municipality is pushing back on some of the new laws, how do we get from where we are now to a point where we have a more consistent zoning framework from municipality to municipality in the state?
It's a medium to long-term project, but there are things we can do in the near term. First, to take your points in order, it is the case that we have too few municipal planners, and that's a problem in terms of just helping municipalities create the positions and hire. And it's also about producing planning professionals with planning degrees. On the planning degrees point, Speaker Shikarchi correctly is creating a commission that will study our own institutions, including URI and RIC and CCRI, and determine who might be best positioned. There are certificate programs, but there is no master's in planning being awarded in Rhode Island right now. I understand the nearest geographically program to us is at UConn. That's unacceptable. We should be producing our own planners right here in state. In addition, we do need to help municipalities create that capacity. So one of the things that our housing department has done, perhaps since our last interview, is we have received approval to fund and, in fact, started the process of creating a municipal fellows program, which will enable the state to co-fund a fellow position, meaning a professional position for example, planning purposes, or for other housing-related purposes in a city or town. So that is new stuff that's underway. That's good, but we've got to get it all going and going intensively. On the question of zigzag planning and zoning processes, that still very much exists. I will say that the speaker's package, in terms of some significant incremental progress, offers the possibility on a pilot basis, if the legislation passes, this is in the new package, on a pilot basis for a municipality to combine local planning and zoning boards. Number one, that will enable quorums to happen more easily because you have fewer people. The dedicated people you have can be devoted to one board. You're not always looking to appoint new people to two separate boards. It also has the potential to expedite proposals that might toggle between the two boards in a single town. Those are terrific. That's a pilot, so we need to work with cities and towns to get them going on it, even if the legislation passes. And there's another very important provision in the speaker's package. When I was the Secretary of Commerce for Rhode Island under our Department of Business Regulation, we saw a lot of progress in creating an e-permitting system, an electronic permitting system. And the vast majority of Rhode Island's 39 cities and towns signed up to have their building permits occur online, which makes them more accessible and, quite frankly, through self-imposition, more accountability by a city or town as to how they're doing in producing a building permit. The same thing could happen with planning and zoning approvals if the speaker's bill passes and that requirement goes to cities and towns to include that in the e-permitting system. That would enable us to have more transparency, more of a window in bill to whether planning and zoning approvals are moving in a given city or town. So those are all important developments. If I may, I want to say a couple more things. This is a good moment to do it.
Please.
A couple more things I want to say is we are engaged in a longer-term statewide housing planning process. And in that process, one of the things that we've emphasized, we put out a report in December that culminated with some of these points. We looked at jurisdictions in the United States that have been successful in planning for housing growth and, in fact, achieving housing growth. And one of the things that we're seeing is that they, in some instances, states work closely with municipalities and larger cities work closely with their constituent components, which are, of course, neighborhoods. And they have this two-sided planning process. The state sets forth vision, offers resources, and the municipalities in a statewide context offer some diagnosis of their assets and needs and can set goals, set targets, identify growth patterns. One of the things I want to point out is that in a couple of places, they're going further and they're starting to tie state funding to whether a municipality makes growth, achieves growth in accordance with its own targets. So New York is one of those places under Governor Hochul in an executive order. The upstate towns in New York over 3 years need to achieve 1% housing growth. Downstate, proximate to New York City, including New York City, need to achieve 3% in 3 years housing growth. And then they're eligible for more state funding for things like infrastructure and things like development incentives. That's a good idea, something to look at. Colorado is also working with its municipalities to set growth targets. Why am I mentioning all of this? Because if you were to seek reforms to the planning and zoning processes and municipalities were not bought in, were not trying to move proposals, were skeptical of the need for housing, were not given the chance, not empowered to envision where housing makes sense within their own boundaries, to set forth their own goals, their own aspirations. If those things didn't happen, still these planning and zoning processes might be slow, might not result in much progress. But I think if we can enable municipalities to feel empowered and be empowered to create their own destiny and then fulfill it, it really might help.
Absolutely. It's almost the carrot and the stick, but at the same time, it lays a pathway forward that is incentivized, but also is completely necessary. It's not miscellaneous. It is completely necessary to see that growth. There is a pitch for $100 million housing bond that some housing advocates, especially homeless advocates, are saying, you know, there's not enough for shelter beds. How do we get, when you look at that bond, I guess your general assessment of it, first of all, and then how do we get to a point where we can almost decouple the different and, quite frankly, very different elements of the housing crisis right now? Because resolving, while there are certainly overlapping key elements in the zoning and so on and so forth areas, the challenge for the unhoused folks and working class housing and luxury housing also are quite different in how they would be implemented and executed. Yes.
Very much so. Yeah. So as you say, for starters, there is a proposal for $100 million in the form of a bond. We very much thank Governor Dan McKee for proposing what would become the largest bond for housing purposes in Rhode Island history. There have been $50 million bonds. There have been $65 million bonds. There's never been $100 million of general obligation bonding for the purpose of housing. So that, first of all, let's see if we can do that. Let's see if that can that case can be made in the General Assembly. We can pass it and we can bring it to the voters and convince them to be generous and, in my view, wise and invest in housing. Now, having said that, yes, there's a variety of needs that, as you say, Bill, we're trying to meet with any dedication of resources, including this bond. In our rendition, in the version we've proposed to the General Assembly under Governor McKee, $90 million of the $100 million would be devoted to housing production and preservation, meaning either creating new housing units, which we desperately need, of every income type all across our state, or preserving units that are affordable. And there'd be an emphasis on affordability. We'd have prioritization for lower income and moderate income housing production. We would also include a special strand of this money for the very first time dedicated to home ownership. One of the things that Governor McKee has emphasized is that we have a home ownership rate that's lower than the United States. We also have terrible inequity between communities of color and the overall Rhode Island community in terms of home ownership rates. We need to remedy those problems and we need to help families build wealth. So we would dedicate at least $30 million within the production $90 million for home ownership. And there'd also be some elements. You correctly state, Bill, that the problem is all across the board. It's at every income level. It's at every price point. What would we do to address that? Meaning even including market rate housing and getting going, infrastructure. One of the things that we hear from cities and towns is, hey, we'd get in the housing business. If you took a look at this tract of land over here that we wouldn't mind at all if it were developed, but we need to connect a roadway in and we can't afford that. Or we need to expand our water and sewer system to that location and we can't afford that on our own. Well, we would help to subsidize that. We already created a modest infrastructure fund in round one of allocating federal money. Now we propose a little piece of that general obligation bond for that purpose.
That last mile piece is so overlooked in some of these discussions. And I've had a chance to speak with people down in some of the rural parts of the state, and they share that sentiment. Not necessarily that they want to build a skyscraper on a wooded parcel in, you know, in Richmond in the deep woods. It's not necessarily that, but there are places that completely sensible for housing production and just simply cut off from not just roads, as you mentioned, sewers, even electric in some cases. These are pretty big problems unless you're going to basically become a survivalist in a tent environment. You need basic infrastructure. So it's a really smart plan from that bond standpoint.
We appreciate it. We would dedicate $4 million of the $100 million bond for the purpose of an infrastructure fund. We've already dedicated that amount, $4 million, out of the federal funds. We're seeing applications flow in for that purpose to the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank. We've also recruited their involvement. We're trying to get really a whole of government response on the housing front. But one of the underlying points that you are making here, Bill, is that there are real problems that communities are facing that if we were to break down the barriers that they're identifying, would result in housing production. So sometimes the dialogue around housing gets to the point where people say, oh, towns are too reluctant or there's too much NIMBYism. True, sometimes. But even in a town that has been slow to produce housing, sometimes there are very legitimate issues, infrastructure, very legitimate issues, concerns that the schools will be overburdened, either in terms of number of pupils or in terms of cost. Well, if we can take away the infrastructure argument by financing it, or if we can do the math along with the town on schools and actually prove that the property taxes generated by the new development will actually outpace, will outflank, will eclipse the expenses to the school system, we might be able to, just by engaging the very legitimate issues, make progress. There's plenty of work to do regarding what towns are willing to do if you help them break down barriers.
Housing Secretary Stephen Pryor, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your insight and your leadership and advocacy in this space. It is, I think, remains, even though the Washington Bridge is certainly dominating headlines, housing is the most fundamental of our challenges, I believe, in this state right now.
I have to agree with you. And Bill, thank you for your continuing focus on it. It makes a difference.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.